Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome from Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and I'm proud to bring you the Age of Heroes. And today we're going to honor Ryan Foley. Greetings and welcome, Ryan. How are you?
I'm doing good, sir. How are you this evening?
I'm doing great. And it's been a while since I interviewed you. And I'm looking forward to re-interviewing you so that folks who've been following the show but for not very long can get to know you a little better.
Excellent. Well, I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
What first got you interested in bodybuilding?
Well, so I was born in 1974, and so that put me in this tremendous window where we saw the birth of possibly one of the greatest action stars and movie stars of all time in Arnold Schwarzenegger. So I think that that's kind of one of the initial bases of my admiration for the male form. I admire it for its power and for its strength. I'm also a longtime follower of comic books. And so while not tremendously realistic in their portrayals as far as, you know, an average human body, so seeing those, the action heroes in those comic books, I'm sure that had to go through, if we did a deep enough psychological deep dive, we would find that somehow imprinted on me whenever you're seeing that, you know, the physiques of Batman and Superman, Captain America and Thor, all these, you know, great characters from Marvel and DC. So I've always been a fan of that bodybuilding aesthetic. I know it's a thing where, you know, as they say, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Clearly, so it's there's all sorts of different body types out there that different people will find physically appealing. And so there's this wide variety. And if you go through and you compare them, so there's the people that do the body weight exercises, and you can see those. There's the swimmer's body, the cyclist body. Then you have the power lifters and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But I think that the bodybuilder aesthetic is something that is tremendously physically appealing to me. So that was something that I wanted to emulate. So going back to my earliest days, you know, my first ventures into the weight room were because I was a football player in middle school and a little bit in high school, but I was not a big fan of basketball. And so if you were in the football program but you didn't play basketball, then they shifted you over to lifting weights. So that was my first experience with it. I, you know, continued with it into high school, took a break from it during my junior and senior year because I was too busy working, then went through and experienced it a little bit in college. But it was one of those things where I didn't have nearly the knowledge that I needed to really take bodybuilding into that next level. It was more about so whenever you're lifting weights for football, it's more along the lines of developing physical power. It's more focused on a single or on a couple key building exercises without going through. And so that's the difference between, you know, strength training for athletics, where, you know, you're mainly going to be dealing with bench press, squat, deadlifts, straight legs, you know, things like that. Adair wasn't really big on building your biceps because you're not going around and curling people on the floor. So in going through and starting that, so I had my basic fundamentals. It wasn't like I walked into the gym for the first time back whenever I decided to start this fitness journey. So I wasn't exactly a gym novice, but it was kind of one of those things where I had to go through and learn. I almost had to treat it like I knew nothing, because going in for bodybuilding, it's more of it's an all over, it's a total workout, because what we're trying to build is a visual aesthetic. And whenever you're going through and doing that, you have to go through and like one of the rules is that your calves should have the same circumference as your biceps. It's why we see a whole host of gym memes where people are talking about how you never skip leg day because it's important. You don't want to go through and have this massively upper, you know, upper body that's, you know, superiorly developed, and then you're walking around on little chicken legs. So so then I go through, I finish my tenure at college, and then like so many Americans, you know, so many people, I got married, I had three kids, I was working, and I knew really next to nothing about nutrition, and didn't realize, you know, all the bad stuff that I was eating and the effects it was going to have over my body. And so in 2014, I had just finally decided that I had had enough. You know, it was one of those things where I made a conscious decision that I decided I wanted to change my life. And so it's kind of one of those things they joke about, well, not joke, that's probably not the right term, but, you know, so they make reference to alcoholics aren't going to get clean until they're ready to get clean. It's right. Something that they have to do for themselves. And so it's a thing where I can't go to my kids and say, hey, I really think you need to lift weights, because there will be resistance there. But if they come to me and say, hey, Dad, can you show me the basics of the gym? Yes, I can, son. Let's get some shorts on and we'll go up there. So it's kind of one of those things where until you're ready to make that change, then you go through. And so when you make that conscious decision saying, I'm going to make this change for myself, that's where things continue to improve. So it was, to answer the question, deep-seated love of Arnold Schwarzenegger, absolutely loving the comic book heroes, not really liking how my body had ballooned, I guess, for lack of a better term. Yeah, I wasn't liking the way that I was going. And so always being fascinated with that He-Man style of physique, I thought that I would go through and make a conscious change dating back in June of 2014 to say, this is how I'm going to change my life and hopefully improve it.
Awesome. It's similar to how I was inspired by comic books as well, but more so by the Sword and Sandal movies that were prevalent during the time of my youth. And the comic book heroes, it wasn't until I discovered Thor and Hercules and Marvel and also Conan the Barbarian that I started, you know, contemplating it as well. So those type of cultural artifacts are very inspiring to a lot of young men, I guess. And some of them go the way of the bodybuilder because of it.
And I think, boy, it's I'm really having to dig deep into the memory banks, but I, you know, so I'm trying to remember back, you know, whenever I'm reading comic books as a young kid, I know they had the advertisements there, you know, for like Spider-Man was webbing up a guy and but it was all over the Hostess fruit pies. I remember that one. Which probably, you know, probably contributed, you know, to a lot of people, you know, eating the bad stuff. But then at the same time, there was always those advertisements that they had in comics. And then I think probably in like Mad Magazine, I remember reading those as a kid, for the Charles Atlas, you know, fitness program. And there's the guy, you know, kicking the sand, in the guy's face and the guy said, oh, I'm going to start lifting weights. And so that way I won't be bullied anymore. So yeah, that probably had a little something to do with it as well.
I those were very influential to me too, and I wound up working with and then for Charles Atlas for a while, and it was great.
Oh, nice.
I sat at Charles Atlas's desk, and I was using his partner, Mr. Roman's chair. There was like all sorts of artifacts. The satellite office was like a museum. There was a bar that he had bent, and there was a leopard shorts that he wore. it was phenomenal, and it was kind of like a childhood dream come true.
And it's amazing to me the level that that science and technology and what we know now about nutrition and things like that, I can't imagine that, you know, not that Charles Atlas was, you know, by any way, I don't want to sound like it sounds inferior, because that's not, I mean, clearly this guy is, he's one of the legends that the pillars are built upon. And if you don't have, the Charles Atlas, if you don't have the Reg Parks, if you don't have the Schwarzeneggers, I don't believe that fitness blossoms into the era that it does. This is all. But so you go back. You can look at these. You know, the bodybuilders from, you know, going back to the 20s and the 30s, and seeing, you know, the musculature there. But I don't think that those guys from even from back in the 50s and 60s had any idea of the level of what bodybuilders would look like by today's standards. You know, it's another foundation that would have to be, if I'm going through and building my house, of the reason why I want to go through and wanted to develop my body, if we're going back into those deep psychological areas. So therefore, during the foundation of my youth, so I'm talking from like age 5 to about 12, I lived in Charlotte, North Carolina. And Charlotte, North Carolina, that was the epicenter, more or less, of the NWA, the National Wrestling Alliance. And so every time that the WWE would show up in North Carolina, specifically in Charlotte, you would always see signs that would say Flair Country. And so Ric Flair was one of the biggest name in wrestling when it came to being in that Charlotte area. So, every Sunday I would watch wrestling, and my dad couldn't stand it because he hated the promos. He hated the guys, you know, yelling into the microphone. And so he made me watch it with the sound down, but I didn't care. So seeing these guys doing stuff in the ring, and they really are, they're tremendous athletes. I've had a little bit of experience, just a small amount. It was enough of a taste to know that I wanted more, but for a very short time, I was a ring announcer for professional wrestling. So
really?
I was that guy that, it was for a short stint for a local federation. And so I was that guy, and I would go into my mode, you know, and the following contest is scheduled for one fall. And, I was the guy that announced the wrestlers whenever they would, you know, come down into the ring. And then I would, so not like a commentary, like the Michael Buffer, the ring announcer guy. And I've always had this love of professional wrestling. And so when you go through and you see the wrestlers that they have in the ring today, you know, even compared to the wrestlers back then, we can just see the development of humankind as a species is continuing to advance. It's one of the things that my son and I were talking about here a while back, about the average height and weight of soldiers in like World War I, and how they advanced up into World War II, and then all the way up into today. And that's one of the things that I think people note specifically about Americans in both a good and a bad way. So like if Americans are outside of the U.S. and, you know, they're traveling around Europe, we're spotted just because we are a big people. I mean, you know, we're not diminutive in size. And so I think a lot of that, it comes from the proper nutrition. And so when you see these wrestlers of today, knowing what they know now, based on the building blocks that have been established there during the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s, that's the reason why we're getting the physiques that we see today. And so much so that I think some of these guys, man, they're scary big. You know, I think they said a lot of the problem with that is because in the modern bodybuilding era, everyone is just about identical in musculature form. So the ambition was to get as big as they possibly can, so they dwarf everyone else on stage. And so that's not been the aesthetic that I have attempted to try to achieve. is more of a leaner body style is what I've been trying to develop since, 2014.
I also don't strive for the new bodybuilding physique. I think at this point in my 60s, it's not something I could attain, even if I had wanted to. I aim for
right.
the basically the sword and sandal physique that I grew up with, and that's epitomized in Reg Park among the old timers, and Lou Ferrigno and The Rock amongst the new Hercules's in these type of movies. I also loved wrestling growing up, and my cousin and I used to watch it all the time, the IWA wrestling initially. When I had my TV show, one of the seasons I was going to become a wrestler. So we linked up with a wrestling school, and I had Dangerous Johnny Diamond as my manager. And we had this whole thing cooked up where they found me frozen in an iceberg like Captain America.
That's awesome.
I was going to be a baby face and then turn into a heel briefly because of some misunderstanding. And we had this whole thing plotted out. Where the difficulty was in the consistency. I found that the fringe wrestling world, not the high professional wrestling world, but the aspect of it that I was dealing with, there was a lot of inconsistency and poor follow-up. So I just couldn't fit my shooting schedule around what we were supposed to be doing. So I dropped that story. But that was the goal of one of my seasons, to start off wanting to be a wrestler and then to end the season with being a wrestler and competing in wrestling matches.
That sounds awesome. I would have loved to have seen that, and listened to your tales talking about all the behind the scenes stuff. Yeah, I'm absolutely fascinated with that. It's essentially a soap opera. It's a soap
yeah.
opera, but where they hit each other with folding chairs, and it's not too different. And so I'm a huge fan of comic books. I think it's a strange thing for me to say, being that I was born in 1974, and so for me, Star Wars is close to a religion. It's mm-hmm. absolutely one of the things that I grew up with. But then I also grew up with comic books, and so now we've shifted into this era. Thank goodness, ever since 2008, and we got to experience Iron Man and everything that has come after that. My home is decorated in the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and so that genre has overtaken Star Wars as my favorite of all time. It was kind of one of those things whenever I first showed my mom The Lord of the Rings, and she watched the third movie, and she said, that was my favorite movie. And I said, oh, out of the trilogy? And she said, no, of all time.
Oh, wow.
And it was all... Yeah, but it was also after she saw, whenever she saw the Fellowship of the Ring, she called me up and she said, I understand you now. I understand why you want to write your books and why you want to create, these worlds and stuff like that. So it was a way for her to kind of understand my mindset. And so what I have told people, and it's a thing where, so if, you've read Marvel Comics at all, you understand the depth of it. You understand the world building, and the mythology of X-Men is something that I will put up there alongside almost any other intellectual property. And
right.
So thank goodness with Disney and Marvel and all of them finally, figuring this out, they're presenting something to the world and everyone's going, wow, this stuff is really cool. And the way I've always approached it, not with like a high-handed mentality and not trying to, say, oh, well, we're better than you, is more along the lines of, yeah, we told you guys this. We told you how, interesting all these stories are. And so, so now the rest of the world is taking notice. And it was funny, because my dad pays zero attention to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But he was over at my house and he saw the poster for Avengers Endgame, which for a while there was the number one highest grossing movie of all time. And so dad's one of those types of people that, oh, well, if it's a success financially, then it must be a really good movie. And so he's looking around all, yeah, these Marvel movies, they make a couple of bucks. So you may be onto something here as far as whether these are good. And that's where, you know, I tell people that I think that the MCU these are the stories that they will be telling 100 years from now. In this way, 100, maybe 200 years from now. The stories obviously will change and they'll adapt to incorporate with the times. But so what we are seeing is the birth of an American mythology and a mythology now throughout the world. You know, the stories, because you can walk in and ask just about any, you know, fifth grader, hey, how did Spider-Man get his powers? And they know the reason. Boy, we kind of diverted off there for just a little bit, but these hero stories that I love so much, I say this with as much humility as I can, I have learned more from reading Spider-Man comics that has shaped my moral compass and who I am far more than any religious text has. You know, it's I want to go through and be a good person to be emblematic of the values that were instilled through me, through, you know, characters like Captain America and Thor and Spider-Man and Wolverine. And so I think that there probably has to be some sort of deep-seated, if I was able to lay down on a couch and talk with a psychiatrist, I have to imagine that those that wanting to go through and be like those heroes, or at least as close as I can in real life, that includes developing the body. And so in going through and developing the body, that's kind of, I think that's probably my way of honoring those heroes that I was such a fan of.
I'm exactly the same way. In fact, I'm writing something on that. And it's amazing how much what you said mirrors what I feel too. I got into the bodybuilding again to emulate my heroes and to be as much like them as I possibly can. And I too see the comic book mythologies now that they've gotten into cinema and television becoming the birth of global mythologies. And we've had global mythologies in the past in comparative mythology, you know, you'll find themes running throughout many cultures. And in my mind, that reinforces the fact that we've had global civilizations in the past, because we have a global civilization now, and these characters are all over the planet. And like you said, you could ask any fifth grader, and they'll be able to detail accounts from these mythologies. So if our civilization collapses, they're going to get more and more regionalized as time goes by. However, these myths will still be recognizable, and people hypothesize archetypes and other ways of trying to explain them.
Well, I think that you make an excellent point there. And so if you were to go through and you study, you know, the image of, let's say, like God in The Simpsons, it would be really hard to distinguish the difference between God and Zeus, because they're both they tend to be the older, the paternal figure with the long white beard and the flowing white hair. I imagine if you had to ask the majority of people, hey, what does God look like? That's kind of one of the things that they would describe. And
right.
So we're talking about this global mythology, but we're talking about it in eras that shouldn't be connected to each other. And so I think what that stems from, so we've had pyramids. We've had pyramids in Egypt, but then we also have pyramids in Central America, two, you know, cultures that shouldn't be anywhere near each other, but So you have to wonder, well, how did they both come up, you know, how did they both come up with these ideas for pyramids? And there has to be what I consider to be certain universal truths where, so if someone figures out over here, that 2 + 2 = 4, someone else in another society, without even, you know, having connection with these other people, they're going to figure out that 2 + 2 = 4 as well. And so there's going to be these certain universal truths, certain universal stories where the core is relatively the same. They just have, we'll just set them in different areas. So whether or not we're dealing with a civilization in India or Central America or the Native American tribes of the United States, we all have this, desire to, we want to hear the stories of these heroes. We want to hear the stories of people triumphing over adversity, you know, and so I think in going through and creating the, we've all stumbled upon these same truths. And so I reinforce this with things that I've learned in my own life. And so I absolutely love that I get to come on here and discuss with you this journey that I have been on. It allows me to share a passion with someone, both with you directly. And I consider you to you've been an inspiration for me. And I appreciate I appreciate the fact that you let me come on here and let me talk about this, because I think whenever you go through and you try to do this level of self-improvement, there's a bit of unintentional pushback, you know, from people, because they see what you're doing and they know that they could do what you're doing if they had the willpower to do it themselves. And so they see that as a bit of a failure upon themselves. So it's, here he is going to talk about, you know, antagonistic sets again. I don't want to hear this, you know, stuff. So here I have an opportunity to come on here and reach and talk with you. So now we've got this dialogue going back and forth. And so that has helped me stay focused. There have been, you know, more than a couple months where I know I'm going through and I'm lifting weights. I was like, oh man, I'm going to talk to Hercules here next week, so I got to come up with something, you know, to talk about. So let's try this. Let's try this new exercise technique, you know, stuff like that. So it's been very well for me. And then the thing that I think we don't understand, and this is where we all have to take that leap of faith. That leap of faith that I'm going through and I'm doing the right thing, and hopefully my message is out there reaching someone else, someone who I never would have had the opportunity, you know, to reach because of my little sphere of influence here in this little town of Ader, Oklahoma. There's probably not a whole lot of people that I would be able to reach in the Tenafly, New Jersey area. And then no telling where all this is getting bounced to on the internet. So the fact that I'm able to come on here and talk about this way that I've gone through and improved my life, it's my way of trying to give back, to help someone that maybe needs that little bit of encouragement that maybe they're not getting from, you know, their home life, their parents, their friends, things like that. And that's where I continue to reinforce the fact that I'm not tremendously special. Point blank, I was not a great athlete. I really wasn't. It took me, you know, 35 years to go through and find my sport. And so my sport is bodybuilding, and that's what I like because it's less competition against other people. Even though iron does sharpen iron, I do believe in the importance of competition. But it's more me. It's me against myself, you know, and that's what I appreciate more than trying to compete against someone else, but I'm competing against who I was yesterday.
And you're very generous, and that's why you're a champion of Olympus, because you're taking your journey and you're sharing it. And you're very open and very honest about not only your triumphs, but your temporary defeats and having to adjust to different circumstances. You've even adjusted how you present, like you went from Purine Strength to the Phoenix Protocols because of the pandemic and other life events. So you're very open to sharing your journey, and I'm impressed by that, and you've been an inspiration in that regard. And also, you pursued your passion, and we initially connected because of the graphic novels that you did on Greek mythology. So those graphic novels I found very inspiring. In fact, they're my favorite Greek mythology graphic novels. You, there too, you took of yourself and you put yourself and your humanity into these stories. You know, they could have easily have been a Greek hero beats something up, which I've seen many depictions of the myths in that way. But you took something of yourself. You took something very human and you revealed it through your graphic novels. So it's the same that you're doing during your podcast. You're taking your humanity, you're taking your human struggle, and again, warts and all, and you've been very openly and honestly sharing it. And that is an inspiration to me and to other people. It deserves to be heard because it's very admirable.
Well, I can't thank you enough for that praise. It means the world to me. And my mentality has always been the same. It's kind of one of those things. It's not that I'm not open to new ideas. I'm very open to learning and finding new ways. I was speaking with a friend of mine this weekend, and I said it's amazing how in these last 10 years, I'm not the same person that I was 10 years ago, and yet I also haven't changed, in that I think there are certain tent poles, there are certain pillars in my life that are never going to be shaken. And so I go through and I build this mentality on the fact that I think somewhere along the way, I think society kind of lost its way just a tad. And I'm sure there's quite a few people out there that would agree with me, depending upon, different aspects that we're looking at. But it feels like we've gotten to this place where people treat, I hope I'm using the term correctly, people treat life as if it's a zero-sum game, in that there's only so many slots for so many winners, and I have to step over you. I have to push you down in order to be successful, because there's only so many places at the top. And I don't think that's how life should be. I do understand, yes, in the Olympics, sure, by all means, yeah, they're going to be, we have to have winners. And so I understand that. But when it comes to general life, my success that I have in the gym is not shunting out someone else and keeping them from being successful. So my thing is that there's more than enough seats at the table. And I remember how hard it was when I first got started. I was embarrassed. I hated my body. I absolutely hated it. And I'm still working through those emotions. I'm still dealing with it. I still deal with the same body images or the body image issues that I had whenever I was excessively heavy. And so in going through, I remember that, I could only do a quarter of a mile at a 0 degree incline on a treadmill before I was, worn out. And so it was this slow incremental success. And so one of the things that, I think when you look around, and if I look back, I wish I could have come to me and said, okay, here's what you're going to do. And more importantly, this is why you're going to do it. And if you do this, and if you do this in this way, this is the result that you will get. So if someone comes along, so now granted, I said I started in 7 years I've been doing this. Mm-hmm. Still don't have it all figured out. Still finding new exercises, still finding new ways to do it. I don't know if there's such a thing as a perfect routine. I'm still trying to dial everything in, to get there. But so if someone were to start today by going through and learning from me, there's a pretty good chance that maybe they can shave 2 years off of their journey by me reaching back and helping them out. And if they come along and if their journey is shorter, I'm more than happy for them to have that shortened journey. I want it to be easier for them than it was for me. Not so easy that they don't have to put in the hard work, but, you know, but easier and, you know, to be encouraging. So I think whenever you go through and you have this knowledge, there's like this, there's this instinctive idea to hoard it so no one else can have it. I mean, I understand that in the business world, because if you know how to do something at your job that no one else is capable of doing, you're immune from being fired because
right.
no one else can do the job that you do. So that, yeah, you know, I can understand getting behind that just a little bit. But, you know, it's, you know, sabotaging your fellow students so when you're at college, so that way you can be higher up on the grade scale, you know, to me, that just seems like a, that seems like a jerk move, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think there for a long time, up until, you know, we started getting to the 70s and the 80s, you know, it was, I think bodybuilding was kind of treated like a dark secret, you know, it's because it was, and everyone, oh, it's just, you know, these big muscular guys going through here and lifting heavy weight and setting it back down. But there is a real legitimate science to it. And that science is what fascinated me. That's so once I started to get into this and I started to learn more of the science behind it, as opposed to not just, you know, reviewing this, you know, 8 weeks to shred workout, and they're going through and they explain, okay, you're going to do this, this, and this, or seeing, you know, this is how Chris Evans got so jacked to play Captain America, and they list his workouts that he's doing, you know, but it's to understand what exercises to do, how to perform them, and why you perform them. That's what really started to draw me in and made me such a big fan of the, it was the science that made me a fan of the sport. And so because of that, so going through and doing my research and stuff like that. And so again, this is where I go back to saying, I am not creating any sort of new techniques. I am standing on the shoulders of geniuses, but hopefully my gift that I bring to the table is that I'm presenting it in such a way that people can relate to it and hopefully they can be inspired by it. I've gone through and I've read a number of books. And so one of the bodybuilders that I am a fan of because of his teaching style, and we've talked about him here on the program several times, is Dr. Jim Stepani. And so he's all over all different types of social media. He's on TikTok and Facebook. And if you name a social media platform, there's a pretty good chance that he's on it. And so he explains what to do and why to do it. But then at the same time, I've read his book. I wish I had a copy of it, but it's like the encyclopedia of bodybuilding. Well, no, I think that might be Schwarzenegger's. What? But
yeah, Schwarzenegger.
So
yeah.
So Stepani has a book about, you know, bodybuilding, and in going through and reading it, that he's a doctor and it reads like a medical textbook. There is very little. So there are, you know, anecdotes or stories or stuff like that. It's like, you're going to do this and you're going to do this and this will be the result. So it's very dry. It's not an easy, fun read that you pick up in your spare time, but it's more along the lines of almost like a medical textbook. And so I can see where people can be like, this is it's too much stuff. It's information overload. It's harder for me to go through and absorb this information. And so by doing that, but when it's you and I sitting here talking, you can imagine us, we've both, you know, sidled up to the health bar and we're going to have a protein shake and we're just explaining what's going on here. And hopefully that creates more of a bonding connection where people can go through and hopefully build, you know, they can get that, oh, I don't want to say motivation, but to be an inspiration, it sounds kind of weird, you know, for me to say that, but if people can come through relatable, there's the word I'm looking for, not inspirational, but more relatable. It's just like, whoa, okay, I understand the problems that this guy is going through. I understand how he's conquering it. So if that's the case, then yeah, maybe I can go through and do that too. And so that's my hope. So by me going through and explaining everything, like you said, warts and all, hopefully that's where people can go through and they can see it's relatable and they can see that their problems can be conquered as well.
And again, that is what is needed, because I found in my journey, and other folks I've had on the show have found on their journeys, that there isn't a right way. There's a right way for now, and that if you do anything long enough, it'll stop working, and then you have to find something else to work. You'll eventually hit that plateau that doesn't go away, so you need to do something very different. And what you do differently may vary each time, but it's a lifelong journey and it doesn't end. That's an important point to make, because a lot of people give up if what they've been doing stops working for them. But if they know that that's normal and that everybody encounters that, not just them. Part of the problem we have in our culture is, even though what we universally experience is the topic of many a television show, many a movie, and many a song, people still feel very alone in what they're going through. So I've always found that anything you could do to show people that they're not alone in what they're going through, that not only is one other person, but countless other people going through the same thing they're going through and have gone through the same thing they're going through, that it helps get through life. Because you aren't in it alone. No matter how alone you think you are, or you feel you are, you're part of the greater community.
Boy, okay. So, as you said, I've tried to be on here and be as honest and forthright. As far as I'm concerned, we're family. So this weekend, I got back in contact. We had been in contact before. But it was the first time in probably almost a decade that a good friend of mine and I sat down over Discord, which is it's a chat service. It's audio, it's video if it needs to be. But Discord is what a lot of the gamers use to go through and talk while they're playing World of Warcraft or Halo or something like that. So a friend of mine and I, so we had reconnected through Facebook, and then he said, "Hey, let's sit down and let's have a talk." He said, "I want to talk to you about your book. Yeah, I just want to catch up with you. I want to see how it's going." So I hadn't heard his voice in maybe a decade, too long. And the second that I heard him, I broke down emotionally. I'm a 47-year-old man, and I really thought that I would get to this stage where I became grizzled and weathered and, something like that. But I found that it's become the opposite. And so I can listen to a great piece of music. I can watch a great movie, and I can see that scene, and I will well up and cry, and I don't care who sees it. I'm not going to be that strong, silent type guy. So I wear my heart on my sleeve, and, so here's my friend that we've just got, reconnected with. And so I'm bursting into tears just to talk to him, but all for such good reasons, And so we talked about his experience with COVID and how it has wrecked his health. And he came to me and he said, "Hey, these are the problems that I'm experiencing. This is all the stuff that I'm going through." And he was like, "Can you help me?" And I was like, "Absolutely. It's like, I will do my best. I'll do I'll put a program together for you." And, he's like, "Well, here's the limitations that I'm experiencing," and, things like that. So I was like, "Yes, absolutely. I will, he's one of the types of people where if he called me 2 a.m. and said, "I need your help," my first response is, "I'm getting my shoes on." So there's that, but then there's also COVID, which has been a nightmare. It really has. And, I experienced COVID myself back in December of 2019. Thank goodness my symptoms were mild. I am vaccinated. But I have a nightmarish aversion for needles. Oh, Oh, they freak me out. Even just talking about them, you know, my fingers will start to itch and they, like, my hands will start to instinctively curl because I hate the thought of needles. It's my weakness. So I opted for J&J because it was one shot and done. Cool. You know, and whenever I got it, I made sure to thank the pharmacy tech that gave it to me. And he was like, I wish half the people were as nice as you, you know, because as he's giving him this life-saving vaccine, you know, and they're, you know, giving him guff, you know, I didn't understand that. And so a while back, September of this year, so there's no booster for J&J at this time, unfortunately. So, but here in Oklahoma, as much as I hate to say it, and I hate to turn things political, but Oklahoma is probably the reddest state in the union. So there's, and that red has bled over. It is dominated by a certain group of people who are still pretty much convinced that COVID's a hoax. You know, so it's that I don't quite understand, especially when you're looking at the data. But so I have lived for since, you know, everything went south in, you know, would that be March of 2020? You know, we've been, that can't be right. It hasn't, March of 2021, is that when everything went south?
I don't know. You know, I've lost track of time since COVID. It might be 2 years already. I know it's been at least a year, but it might be more than that.
Yeah, it's weird how the time. Yeah, I'll have to go through and look at my notes. You know, but so we've gone through, we've done this, and so we have been in this intense system where I have to remind myself I'm not alone. You know, and there's, I mean, I almost have to remind myself of that on a pretty, you know, regular basis. I understand. So I didn't read the book as a kid, clearly a mistake. But this past in December, I watched Denis Villeneuve's Dune. I was completely blown away by Dune. Absolutely loved it. And I saw the bones of so many other properties that had been built upon Dune. And so Dune has that absolutely, you know, just amazing quote about how fear is the mind killer.
Yes.
You know, I don't want to, I'm afraid I'm going to go through and butcher it, but it's, you know, fear is the mind killer. Fear is the small little incremental, you know, death that kills you a little bit at a time. And for me, it's loneliness.
He took that from a book called Voice of the Silence by Helena Petrovna Blavatsky. When I read Dune in high school, I recognized it right away. I said, okay, that's where he got that sentence from. But yeah, it's a powerful sentence, and he incorporated it into something that reached many more people than Blavatsky did.
I was going to say, I challenge you to say that name 10 times really fast. But so just while we're on here and we're listening to it, I just went through and you know, Googled it real fast. And so the quote here that comes from the book is, I must not fear. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the little death that brings obliteration. And I understand what he's talking about there, but for me, what COVID has revealed is, for me, it's loneliness. Loneliness is the little death that, you know, it chips away at you time after time after time. And so it can get to a point where it feels like there's almost, you know, nothing left. And so to go through, and I tried to find peace in the solitude. I've talked in here several times about how I wear these giant over-the-ear headphones. I have them on right now to talk to you, as a matter of fact. And because the people that wear the earbuds, man, they hurt my inner ears too much. I just don't feel really comfortable. And people that wear on the ear headphones, they're clearly psychopathic, and so you should stay away from those people. But so I wear these big, giant over-the-ear headphones, and they basically just scream, "Leave me alone." And so it's a thing because when I'm there at the gym, I'm there to work. And so what I've been trying to do within this last little stretch is really stay focused on my breathing. I think that's it's a holdover from me starting to dip my toe into yoga and starting to understand, you know, the importance of breathing. So I'm going through and I'm doing these new lifting techniques. And then, so I'm trying to focus on the muscles, and then I'm going through and I'm trying to focus on my breathing, and I'm doing all this sort of stuff. And so when I have that, so I'm focused on my breathing, I'm focused on the muscles, I don't have time to worry about the outside world. If only for an hour, then I can go through there and I have that, you know, that isolation where I've turned it all inward. So that way I can focus on me. And I think to an extent, I would have to talk with a Buddhist or a monk or, you know, or someone like that. But I think that's my way of finding a certain Zen state or a very Jedi state, you know, where I'm not worried about the past. I'm not worried about the future. I'm here in this infinite now where my only focus is just on me, but yet also not focusing on anything. So I think there's a certain Zen state that comes with that.
Yes.
And so, you know, so going through and finding that. And so while I know that it's easy for people to come on here and they're listening to us and they're like, I thought this was a show about bodybuilding. And it's like, and so we haven't covered a tremendous, like how to lift weights at all. It's more along the lines of, that's what I hope everyone, you know, comes away from this from, is that you begin to develop this emotional core within yourself that is so tremendously powerful. You go through and you start changing your mindset. You know, when you go through and you deadlift 400 pounds in the morning, filing paperwork and answering phones after that is all tremendously easy because you got the hardest part of your day out early. And so by going through and developing yourself emotionally, I think that's what allows you to weather the storm. And I found that that's true because when COVID hit, that's when I realized how bad and how important the gym was to me. Because once they closed all the gyms here in Oklahoma, we didn't have a choice. And so Oklahoma, thankfully, in this regard, was one of the first areas to open back up. And so it was this weird thing where I was exercising with a mask on, but, you know, that was extremely problematic. But, you know, so I'm going through and I'm using the disinfectant stuff. I'm wiping stuff down, you know, before I use it, after I use it, stuff like that, just because I'm afraid that we would have to go into another lockdown, especially
right.
With Omicron just raging right now. And everyone else just kind of treating it like, eh, it's the flu, or eh, it's a cold. So it's kind of one of those things, oh, just please don't let me lose, you know, the gym again, or only let us in limited numbers. But in going through and developing this emotional strength, that's what I think no one talks about whenever it comes to these bodybuilding programs. And I know it sounds weird, you know, because, oh, you know, you're going through, you're developing yourself physically, but you're also developing yourself intellectually because you're going through and you're studying all these different workout techniques and figuring out, you know, what to do and why to do it. But then there is this emotional core that develops within you. And that emotional core, it makes you stronger, but it also makes you more compassionate. And that is what I hope everyone takes away from this. Because it was something I couldn't find that in any of the books. No one told me that as you go through and you start to develop this, you know, you're going to develop into a more complete human being.
Yeah.
And so I think one of the things that we have to do to be that complete human being is to help the other people. I think that's where you have to reach back and help people because, again, there's multiple seats at the table. There's more than enough. And there's enough food for everyone. And so I want to be able to reach back and say, please come here and sit with me and experience the heights that I have experienced. And then if we can get that to echo out, it's, you know, it's kind of one of those things where one person teaches two, those two people teach four, four becomes 16, and then it just, and on and on and on, it radiates. And so, you know, that's the thing that I'm tremendously thankful for. It took me years to learn this and put it all together. And so hopefully by me coming on and telling this story of, you know, this is how I got here, hopefully it's inspiration to someone else. And so that's where I go back to. I'm not tremendously special. I was not a fantastic athlete in high school. The joke is I was never much of an athlete. I was always an athletic supporter, you know, but in going through and doing this, I found my sport. And in a way, I found my authentic self. And that's where you have to strip away, you know, all the crap that the world just wants to heap on you. And but if you can strip it away and find that authentic self, that's where you want to reach out and help people. And I think right now that's where, man, we need that more than ever.
And that's why you're a champion of Olympus, because you get it. That's the basic understanding. And each of us can impact the world tremendously by improving our circle, no matter how small or large that circle happens to be in our life. And the symbol of my community wellness initiative, which right now is a group on Facebook and my local community here in Tenafly, is the cornucopia, you know, that realization that there's abundance, like you said. So I'm glad we're on the same page. And when the music's playing, I want to share something with you. Thank you so very much, Ryan. How can people contact you?
The way that you promote and tag me on Facebook is the absolute best way. I'm more than happy to reach out, or if someone were to reach out to me, I'm more than happy to answer any questions that they have. I'll do my best to explain things that maybe you don't need a little bit more attention. But yeah, how you promote me there on Facebook is the absolute best way for people to get in contact with me.
Well, thank you. I consider you family too. We've been talking for years now and gotten to know each other very well. And I'm greatly honored that we're having these conversations, and I'm very happy these conversations will continue. I want to wish you and yours a very happy and healthy new year.
Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate you, and I appreciate you letting me come on here and talk about this journey that I've been on.
And thanks to everybody who tuned in, whether you're a caller and you're in our queue, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, or whether you're going to check us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And we're going to close with one of Virginia Ackley's songs, If You Can Dream. Thanks again, Ryan.
Thank you, sir.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky, but only if you can dream. If love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake, dream till you feel, dream till you know it, dream till it's real. If you can dream, then you can be bound by love and yet be free, but only if you can dream. when love and trust are deep and fair. There is nothing your heart won't dare, but only